Welcome to the Weekly Beat by Mansa with your hosts, Maggie Mutesi and Dumi Jere, giving you all the info on Africa's big finance and economic stories. The Weekly Beat by Mansa.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us on once again this episode of the Weekly Beats. And we're super excited to have you this week of the World Cup as some African countries progress or make some progress. We're just hoping that some actually come out. And I am coming to you from Dakar in Senegal, but also joined by Akol Dok in South Sudan. Akol, a very good morning. Oh, good afternoon, depending. I feel like I get confused.
Yeah, good afternoon.
It's great to have you on. Have you been following the World Cup?
Here and there, not really aggressively.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of, I get a heart attack, so I try to stay away and just check updates on Twitter or somewhere.
Yeah, I just follow the African countries, really. I see Ghana, Senegal, Cameroon.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. Anyway, so we'll just jump right into our story for the week, and this time around it's Ghana. I read an article, I think on Bloomberg, talking about Ghana, how Ghana has been one of the most attractive investment destinations in Africa. But if you look at the past couple of months, the country has really faced a deep economic crisis. As of now, we're looking at inflation that has actually reached almost 40%. And its currency that has fallen by almost half compared to the US dollars. But what's happening in Ghana, nobody really understands. And I really want to bring you in, Akol. I mean, Ghana has been like a role model. It's been one of the fastest growing economies across Africa. But right now, as we look at it, with their current dates, the inflation and, you know, everything that is happening, I feel like it's coming to a point where even, you know, the date is about to be declared as unsustainable by the IMF. I mean, I want to hear your sentiments on some of the developments we're seeing in this West African country.
I think it's one of those things that it's interesting, especially considering Ghana, because Ghana is considered the darling of Africa. I mean, economically, politically, it's a country that's had stable elections. It has an economy. Mm. It's the second largest gold producer in Africa, and at one point in 2019 it was the largest gold producer in Africa, and it's second largest cocoa producer in Africa. So you see a country that's considered a healthy economy, but now we start to see challenges that it's facing. You see high inflation. The Ghanaian currency, the cedi, has lost its value this year almost 28%. There's a crisis that people are crying about. Food prices, gas prices have gone up. I think it goes to the bigger macroeconomic challenges facing many African countries, is that we are told that development, we're told that progress is in line with sort of this, the view of Western economic standards, such as you produce and you export and you get hard currency and you use that hard currency to back your currency and you import goods. And if you look at some of the challenges that is facing Ghana, is that Ghana is importing food. I mean, he's importing a lot of his food. So when you're importing goods, you get in a situation where you're a victim to global prices. And even if you're importing food from even neighboring African countries, the coronavirus pandemic, the issue in Russia and Ukraine has created a lot of issues in the world, and you have a global inflation issue. So what you're facing with Ghana is a multifold. I mean, many experts are accusing the government of spending too much, putting the government in debt. But people can say that the government thought that this, the heyday would last. They thought that it could be the darling forever. But in many African countries, we don't plan for shocks. We don't see it. I mean, at one point, Ghana was the fastest growing country in the world. I mean, Ghana grew at almost 15% in 2012 or 2013. I mean, that's high growth rate. But I think also sustaining it. And if you look at Ghana is importing a lot of things for its manufacturing sector. And a lot of things are leaving. I mean, money is leaving the country. And more money leaving the country than coming in. And it's putting a lot of pressure on the Ghanaian currency. So it's interesting that now they've turned to the IMF, these Bretton Woods institutions, to see what's going on. But it'd be interesting how this all pans out.
I mean, when I hear you talking about what could have caused this, and obviously the government has also come out to say, well, it's the pandemic, it's the war in Ukraine, which has affected literally every country globally. Every country has literally been hit in one way or the other because of the geopolitics in Ukraine and Russia, but also the pandemic. But Ghana is not an oil-dependent country. What could have gone wrong, really?
I think it's a couple of things. I think the biggest pressure that Ghana is facing, granted, governments are having problems across Africa. You saw this in Sierra Leone. You've seen this in Nigeria.
Yes.
But the issue of the fact that Ghana is not used to this. And I think that's why it's a big story, because if we're honest, a lot of currencies in Africa are not performing.
So it's like the rest of Africa is actually used to this, but Ghana has always...
Yeah, and I know it sounds crazy, because Ghana, you never see Ghana in the news for protests or high living crisis, but look at the way that the Naira has depreciated, or different currencies in Africa have depreciated. I mean, you look at the Malawi Kwacha, you look at the different currencies across Africa, the South African Rand, the challenge you're seeing in South Africa. But recently, Ghana has seen as like a darling story. So when it's in the news, because it's something new, it's something that's shocking for people. Because if you look at it, Ghana has historically been seen as the growth story. It's the number one destination for Africa. That's everybody, Ghana, Accra, all this. But now you're starting to see a situation where it shows that Ghana is also not immune to some of the challenges that it's African counterparts face. Many people are arguing that they blame this on weak institutions. I mean, if you look at it, when I was researching the issue, there are some people in Ghana who say, we blame the government. The government overspends more than they do, and they borrow. I mean, if you look at Ghana
now...
But
isn't that like the case across most of the African countries? I mean, it was the same case when we remember Kenya last year, even until now. It's like they are overspending and yet they're overborrowing.
That's cause. I mean, many people in the public, I mean, now Ghana is trying to crack down on its issue of the currency. So they try to crack down on the black market, and even black market people on their ass, they said, no, it's the government, it's the politicians who have the money. We're just small traders. I mean, you look at, okay, in terms of debt, its debt to GDP levels are not as bad as you could say other countries. I mean, if you have a country that has a GDP of about nominal GDP of 74 billion, and its debt is about 23, 24 billion. But I think also the challenge comes is that the government is trying to find a quick response to deal with the shock. Because how do you deal with the angry populace, right? The angry populace will push pressure on the government. And then when the populace goes out and makes noise, then it puts pressure on the government to respond. The government's supposed to have a response. So immediately they respond. And if you look at it like now, its debt to GDP is around 78%. So it's increasing. And they're going to get into another facility. And actually, if you look at it, in 2015, they got an extended credit facility by the IMF to fund its fiscal and external gaps. So this is something that's actually been happening, but it just hasn't been covered. So like okay, I'll correct, I just had my note. Okay, so its public debt now is about 48 billion, and it's been growing considerably. And now the public are losing trust in the economy. So they lose trust in the economy, they lose trust in working in the country, they lose trust in the currency. It's causing people to lose trust. So this thing is more of an issue of a trust thing with the public, but then also it's putting pressure on the government, because when people are protesting high prices, people are protesting inflation for a country that has relatively had stability, it becomes a problem, because this is a shock. That's what it is.
I mean, I completely agree with you, but now this is where, for me, I think we have to come in, because you're looking at businesses that are really strained or are losing a lot of money because of the economic crisis. Obviously, it always trickles down to the population. In such instances, a call, for example, where you have a crisis like this, what do businesses do? Or what, like, as investors, as business people, what happens next?
Well, I think the challenge for Ghana is that investors now are becoming wary, they're becoming frustrated, and they're pulling out some of their money. And the reason for this is because they were sold that this is going to be a stable country. This is, I mean, many people want to invest in Africa, but they don't like the risk of investing in Africa. So Ghana has sold that, hey, you can invest in Africa without the risk of investing in Africa. So now it's putting pressure on people. I mean, if you look at some of the reforms that the government has done, it's been mostly fiscal reforms to reduce the budget, to reduce expenses. I mean, they've banned a hiring freeze on all public servant hiring. They've banned buying vehicles. I mean, small things. But another thing that is that they haven't really cut spending on some of these big developmental projects. And if you look at, they usually happen when there's a campaigns or elections. I mean, the last election happened in 2020. I mean, you're expecting elections in a couple of years. So for investors, that's why they look at how the government performs, because you may not have a private sector. You look at how the government are performed. So when you see that the government is now having challenges, the government can't control what's going on, you start becoming wary, like, hey, are my investors protected? Are my investments safe? And so for an investor, you'll become worried that you're going to risk a lot of losses. And as any person, no matter how patriotic you are, you want to go where you make your money. You go where your bread is butter. So many investors are not are going to be hesitant to invest in Ghana, are going to be hesitant to invest in some of these projects that have been planned, that have been planned based on the belief that, okay, this growth is going to continue.
I mean, what a roller coaster for Ghana. But do you actually think the debt can be sustained at this moment? I feel like it's such a dream farm,
I
no?
mean, is the dream farm an issue with sustaining debts? Okay, there's also the argument of how do you sustain debts as a country, as a government. So a private company is in their vested interest to maintain debts because you want to make dividends for the shareholders. A government is run by politicians. Politicians want to be reelected. So usually it's not rational for you as a politician to come and say, hey, I'm going to come to office, I'm going to cut funding, I'm going to cut salaries, I'm going to cut expenditures. These expenditures go to who? They go to political allies, they go to cronies, they go to business people who supported your campaign. So if you have a lot of projects coming up and you're expected to make money from them and you support a campaign, it's difficult. So that's why it's always difficult for governments to cut spending, because how do you cut spending when you're a politician? It's essentially like you're making sure that you don't win the re-election. So, and you don't get re-elected by telling people I cut spending and reduce the debt. You get re-elected by promising projects or promising development. I mean, you can go to different areas and finance development, which is why it's a conundrum for many people when they talk about how do you reduce debt-distressed countries. I'm like, it's difficult because people want, that's the challenge of also democracy. I mean, people argue that it's easier to be done in authoritarian or autocratic country because the autocrat can just say, do this and it's done. But in democratic countries, every 4 years or every 5 years, whatever time frame, you have to go to the people and say, hey, this is what I've done for you. You should re-elect me. But as a sane politician, you cannot come and say, hey, Maggie, I've cut the debt, I've reduced salaries, I've cut allowances. You're gonna say, no, those allowances affected me. I'm a civil servant. I had allowances for this, I don't have that. And the same thing you see what happened with the SGR, you see what happened with the flyover where people are accusing Uhuru of trying to quote unquote buy votes for his supporters. But it's human nature, it's how politics is like. So it's an interesting conundrum. Can you increase debt? I don't think so, because you have politicians running it. And debt is to fix the economy is a long-term project. And that's something in Africa we fail to understand. It's like economy things, like it doesn't happen today. It deteriorates over time and it can be built over time. So when you come and say, hey, I'm gonna reduce budgets for 3 years, it may take 3 to 5 years for people to start seeing those results. But in those 3 years, somebody lost their salary. Somebody lost 10% of their salary. They lost allowances. They
Somebody
lost
lost
different
their
packages
business.
they
I
got.
mean the
They
pressures.
lost their
Yeah.
business.
I
Yeah.
mean, Akol, I'm gonna have to leave it here because we're running out of time, but you're absolutely right. And so to reiterate, I think the extensive borrowing from Ghana didn't really match their spending. I think I also got some statistics that it collects about 11.3% of taxes percentage of the GDP, which is below the African average of 16.6%. Just to reiterate the president's words, he says, you know, Ghana will restore and sustain debt sustainability and also increase tax collected as a percentage of GDP to as much as 20%. Where that is going to leave the people still, I mean, these are still drastic steps we see the government is taking. That brings us to the end of this particular episode. And thanks, Akol, for joining us and for everyone that has tuned in. Here's to peace and profits. Have a lovely week ahead.
The Weekly Beat by Mansa with your hosts, Maggie Mutesi and Dumi Jerry, giving you all the info on Africa's big finance and economic stories. The Weekly Beat by Mansa.